And welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and this week we are revisiting some of our past guests to find out, well, how things have gone since they last appeared on the show. And we're going to start off with the Veterans Multi-Service Center, and with us today, Debbie Derricks, the Director of Development. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate the opportunity to share our mission.
Well, how did 2021 treat you since we last spoke, which was back in May?
Well, things, despite the world being topsy-turvy, have been pretty excellent for the VMC and all of the veteran families that we serve. Since we last spoke, we've actually opened up two new office locations. So, you know, we serve veterans with a variety of services throughout the tri-state area. And now we're moving back to, you know, some brick-and-mortar locations. So we just opened up a new office in Delaware as well as New Jersey. And we're very excited to, you know, open those doors and allow veteran families to come and visit us for whatever need they may have.
But then you've always had a presence in Delaware and in New Jersey. So this is just enhancing?
So we have always operated in Delaware, but we've never had, you know, brick and mortar space. So mm-hmm. I think that that's really new and exciting, and it's definitely central to all of, we could say, the veterans that would be in need. There's a lot of homelessness in the area, which we are in Newcastle. So it's definitely like a pivotal move in order to have more outreach efforts. And, you know, again, when you're talking about the opioid response, we're doing more women veteran center initiatives and things of that nature, too.
Tell us about that mission, though. I mean, it's so all-encompassing for vets and their families.
Comprehensive. Yeah, comprehensive is definitely the best way to describe it. So if you look at a spectrum of needs, anything from combating homelessness and hunger to helping a veteran receive job training, employment placement. We do benefits and entitlement analysis. So it's pretty much anything under the sun. If you or a veteran is in need, you're more than welcome to come to our center, visit us, or check us out online, vmcenter.org.
Now, we are still in the COVID crisis. The pandemic, of course, affected virtually every area that you serve. Homelessness, hunger, jobs. You do it all.
Right. We really do. Of course, you can imagine the veteran population is often hit hardest when it comes to the opioid epidemic, homelessness, hunger, pretty much anything that you can possibly imagine, because it is, you know, a small universe within the United States. And we're seeing those same effects concentrated within the veteran audience that we serve. So anything, like you mentioned, from an increase in homelessness because of, you know, lack of job security to an increase in hunger, you know, we're just celebrating in the holidays. So from Thanksgiving into the new year, we see an influx of folks that are coming to us for meals for their families, for job opportunities so that they can start off in the new year, you know, hopefully with better luck. We feel blessed that we're able to be there. It is truly a double-edged sword when we talk about growth. You know, we're in the community and best able to serve the veteran families that we see, but that growth is because there is such a great need for our veteran families.
And anybody can come to you who thinks that they served. Is that a way to describe it?
Absolutely. Anyone who has served in the U.S. military likely qualifies for some level of services. So I think that that's a great way to kind of look at it. But I mean, hey, a lot of us, my sister personally served, you know, my father, my grandfather. I'm sure people know of an uncle, a next door neighbor, you know, someone that has been in their family who has served and may be in need of services. And that's why it's so important for us to have the opportunity to get the word out. And I think a lot of people do overlook their benefits that they may be eligible for. And then in many cases, you know, we may have to help their families in the future. So I think the best way is if you are a veteran, if you have served, you can talk to one of our staff members and make sure that, you know, everything is taken care of and that you are getting the benefits that you're entitled to.
We've got a new year. What's coming up for you?
So I think with, again, going back to opening up a new office in Delaware, opening up a new office in New Jersey, we are starting to serve more counties within central Pennsylvania because we go out to central PA. I think we definitely have a lot of growth in our future so that we're better able or better positioned to serve our veteran families throughout the tri-state area and beyond.
What are you looking for from us?
Any type of support. I mean, we really couldn't operate without the community support. So whether it's volunteering or donations, especially during this time of the year, we really, really depend on that in order to serve those who have served. So again, you know, listeners can go to our website, vmcenter.org, make a donation, or find out how they can best get involved.
That was Debbie Derricks, Director of Development for the Veterans Multi-Service Center. And again, you can find them, vmcenter.org. And thank you, Debbie.
Thank you.
This past year, we spent several episodes discussing highway safety, how to keep us and our first responders and emergency Cruise Safe. And here to talk a little bit about the programs that are available is Todd Leese, Traffic Incident Management Coordinator at the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission and the Assistant Director of Training at ResponderSafety.com. Todd, welcome back. We are ending the year on a grim number, are we not?
Yes, we are. There has been 62, as of this morning, emergency responders struck and killed. So when I talked to you the other day, we were at 61, I believe, and another officer was killed overnight down in North Carolina.
And so this doesn't even touch the number of emergency crews and first responders who are injured, who are struck, but don't die.
That's exactly right. So there's at least two emergency responders struck every day in the United States. So that means that their truck was struck, their car was struck, or somebody was struck. You know, so they may not be injured, but their equipment's damaged. And the number's hard to quantify because we don't keep a good job of tracking those numbers. We just started a new database with Federal Highway to track those numbers, and we're working on that now. There's a responder struck and injured every 2 days and a responder struck and killed every 5.5 days.
Well, how do we prevent this? Since we spoke, I know that you've gotten involved with yet another organization, the ResponderSafety.com. What are you recommending for us, especially as we enter a new year? Teach us some new driving habits.
So, you know, one thing, that's the exact thing we need people to do is just to drive. You know, everybody has distractions when they're in their vehicles or something going on. So people think, well, I'm on my phone in the car, on my Bluetooth, so it's safe. But are you safe or are you distracted even while you're driving? Are you thinking about driving? Or are you thinking about what I'm having for supper or making plans with my family or work? You know, I teach responder safety and I talk about the Zoom zombies now. Now a lot of us have online meetings during the day and we're trying to run our errands during the day too or running from place to place and we're not totally focused on driving. So, you know, we need to be focused on driving. We got to stop being drug, drowsy, distracted, disgruntled, or just plain dumb when we're behind the wheel. We got to just concentrate on driving and protecting ourselves, protecting other motorists, and protecting emergency responders that are out every day helping us.
What's coming in the new year? You work not just with drivers. You also work with the first responders and emergency people themselves. Are there any new options out there for them? Any new resources?
At ResponderSafety.com, we're always developing new training classes, and our goal is to develop 4 new training modules, and this is online training modules that are available free. We're going to focus on emergency responders doing weather emergencies and whether that's doing flooding, snow, even extreme heat. We want to work on responders being able to give hand signals at the scene so that everybody knows what we're doing when we're directing traffic, how do we properly direct traffic and direct motorists around the scene, and being visible. We talk about PPE, personal protective equipment. So do I have the right helmet for the job? Do I have something else for the job that I should be doing? And that's one of the things we're working on as well as for a module.
So you're creating like an international language of emergency responders?
Yeah, basically it's trying to get everybody on the same page. So again, if in Pennsylvania, we have 54,500 emergency responders. We've trained a little bit over 30,000 of those responders in highway safety and in traffic incident management. So that's great, but that still means we have 45% of our responders that we haven't reached, which isn't good. And then, you know, we also have to sort of get the public to be aware of what we're doing. So trying to reach out to the public and say, hey, you know, we're out here trying to help you. We're, you know, many of these people that are out here are volunteers or it's a low paying job. You know, the tow truck operators that are out there aren't getting rich going out there towing. You know, a lot of times it's a $10 an hour job, a $12 an hour job, and they're risking their lives going out there to help you at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in all kinds of weather. And you know, they're being hit and injured or hit and killed for that.
And we, of course, had John DeWeese, the Tow Ninja, on with us one time. And he had been hit. And this is a really big personal cause for him. And we keep forgetting that tow truck operators are out there as emergency responders.
Yeah, we definitely can't do that without that. We can't clear crashes or disable vehicles without having those tow operators involved with us. So we got to make sure that we're including them when we talk about emergency responders because, you know, it's a coordinated effort. We need the fire. We need the police. We need the 911 operators to get everything moving. And we need the public. You know, they're part of the team, too, because we need them to pay attention, give us information, let us know when something's going on, but they can give us room to work whenever we're out there at the emergency scene.
And where can we go for more information? Where do you want to send us? And something national, please.
Yeah, I would recommend going to ResponderSafety.com. So that's a national site. It's a group. It's run strictly as a volunteer basis, but it's a very well put together group, which I'm part of, I'm proud to say, as their assistant director of training. And it has resources not only for emergency responders, but it has training. It also has resources to let you know. It also has things that you could post on your social media page. You know, it has little video clips that we could share to try to promote safety. So it's like a one-stop shop for everything dealing with emergency responders working on roadway incidents.
And we will remember that, ResponderSafety.com. Thank you, Todd, and we'll see you again in 2022.
Sounds good. Thank you.
This past year, we had Habitat for Humanity Philadelphia on and learned a lot about the great programming that you offer and at the same time, how you came through COVID, a weird year there. And now Tom Mann, he is the Director of Marketing and Communications for Habitat for Humanity Philadelphia, joins us with a little recap. And first, welcome, Tom.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get a chance to chat.
Well, since we last spoke to Habitat Philly, what's been going on? How did you wrap up 21?
We had an amazing year in total for our organization. So obviously, tons of challenges with the ongoing pandemic, certainly. But in terms of our programming, we wrapped up construction on Oxford Green, which is our 20-unit affordable home community in North Philadelphia in June. So looking at that, that's 20 families that have a safe, warm, and dry place to live that didn't have that at the beginning of this year. So thinking about that towards the end of the year is always really exciting for us to think about those families spending their first holiday season in their new homes, which is just so exciting for the organization. So yeah, that was certainly the high point for us as an organization this year.
We always think about you're doing single homes. We see volunteers hammering away to create a single family home. And here you just surprised me with a 20-unit affordable home community. And for anyone who's not aware of it, you're really just looking to create affordable, safe housing for our families.
Exactly. And that's a key kind of metric that we've looked at over the past couple of years is aside from building the one-off homes, which we still absolutely do, we really look at opportunities where we can build a community. And so families that work through our home ownership program, they put in 350 hours of sweat equity. So spend a few years going through the program and volunteering on site and really putting in the time, not only on construction sites to build homes with us, but also putting in education hours. So families that go through our program actually come in and they go through financial literacy classes so that they're really set up for success once they purchase that home and actually own a home and have a mortgage to account for. So really setting folks up for success in that way. But with that, going through the program, we found building communities like Oxford Green, our 20 units that we just built, people go through the program and already they are so close with their neighbors that they're moving into the homes that they move in. And it's unbelievable to see just kind of the community and the family feel that's on those two blocks in North Philadelphia that we just completed. Aside from that, certainly we have an emphasis on new home construction. But a huge growing portion of our organization, we actually are dedicating a lot of resources to making critical home repairs. So there's 121,000 homes in the Philadelphia area that are deemed inadequate by HUD. And so thinking about that and thinking about where we can have a huge impact as an organization, we've doubled down our efforts on making critical home repairs for families that are in owner-occupied homes, already living in these homes. And so we've doubled our efforts, we've ramped it up, and we're able to make critical home repairs to more than 75 homes this year, because once we ended at Oxford Green, we were kind of in an in-between phase with our new home construction. So really, you know, ramping up our home repair work was able to continue to see that progress. And really, for those 75 plus families, making those repairs that are so needed and allow them to remain in their home, for many of the seniors that we work with, allow them to age in place in a home that they weren't going to be able to do that before we were able to work alongside them. So certainly very exciting for us in the home repair side of things.
So you're not just creating communities by placing these new homeowners in there who are invigorated and energized and invested. You're also stabilizing and keeping a community together by keeping families in their homes.
Exactly. And that's, you know, we see, especially in Philadelphia, you know, we have so many owner-occupied homes in the city, and there's so many areas that are just really, in terms of property values, they're taking off, which is exciting for the city, and it's really exciting for homeowners. But for a lot of folks, they're not able to kind of tap into that equity because their homes are over 100 years old, and they have structural issues and repairs that are needed. But families that we work alongside, they come to our program, and they don't have the means to make those repairs. So they are often not able to take advantage of the rising property value and the equity that they have in their home. So by our home repair team going in, making those needed repairs for those families and working with them, it actually allows them to stay in those neighborhoods that they've always known their entire lives. Many of these families, it's a property that's passed down from generation to generation. And now they're able to stay in that home and see that asset, that home, be passed down even further. And just building that equity and that generational wealth through home ownership is such a huge part of what we are trying to do here. So certainly our home repair program has a vital role to play in that.
Well, I was going to ask you what you're doing in 2022, what the plans are, but you've just started recently a new campaign. And I'm going to guess that that's going to be the focus this year. We build together.
It is. It's so exciting. We feel so much momentum in the organization right now. So in October, we publicly launched We Build Together, which is the first ever sustained fundraising campaign for Habitat Philadelphia. And so certainly we've always relied on everyone in the region, really. So our volunteers, our donors, but, you know, for people to make those donations to kind of help the organization. But this, for the first time ever, we have put out there, you know what, we need a sustained fundraising campaign. So our goal is to raise $5 million by the end of June 2022. So by June 30th, our goal is to raise $5 million. We are already at $4.3 million, which is so amazing. Like we've blown away by the support that we've received. And once we hit $5 million, the exciting part about this is it is a build campaign. We are using this to scale up our program. So the success of this campaign is going to literally allow us to work alongside twice as many Philadelphia families than we already do. So we're talking about doubling our capacity as an organization with the success of this campaign, which is just so exciting. And so we certainly are going to be looking into the new year to kind of push that effort out there even further. And we're really excited to see that how the Habitat family comes together to help us bring that over the finish line.
So we find out more information about that and, of course, bringing the volunteers back on site when we go to your website, right? And where do you want us to go?
Absolutely. So habitatphiladelphia.org is where you would find any information about the organization. Still, since you brought up volunteers, we are still, unfortunately, in like a holding pattern there with the pandemic. We are hopeful, certainly. It's such a huge part of the organization to have our volunteers out there. So we are so hopeful that we're going to be able to get out in the new year in 2022 and be able to welcome folks back. But habitatphiladelphia.org is where you'll be able to keep up to date with the organization, make a donation, sign up to stay to hear updates about our volunteer program. And that's really the best way to stay involved with us.
Again, habitatphiladelphia.org. And that was Tom Mann, Director of Marketing and Communications, Habitat for Humanity, Philadelphia. Tom, best wishes for the new year.
Same to you. Thank you.
Just a couple of weeks ago, we spoke with Zachary Sherman. He is the Executive Director of PENNY, which is the Pennsylvania Health Exchange. And Zach returns with us. Zachary, thank you for being here today.
Hey, Laura. Thanks so much for having me back on.
Well, since we last spoke, we have passed a very important deadline to sign up for insurance that began on January the 1st. That was December 15th. Do you want to update us now? What's going on at the Health Exchange here in Pennsylvania?
Certainly. So as you noted, the January 1st deadline has passed, but there's still more time during PENNY's open enrollment for people to come in and get covered, for people to come in and get access to financial assistance. The last day of open enrollment is January 15th. That's the last day to come in and get covered for 2022. The change is that you'll be signing up for coverage that begins on February 1st.
There are circumstances, though, if you want to go over those again, because over the course of the year, people will become eligible to enroll under your exceptions.
That's exactly right. So generally speaking, open enrollment is the time every year where people can come in, get covered for the upcoming year. They can, if they're uninsured, that's when they can come in. If they're insured, but they are looking for an affordable alternative, that's when they can come in and enroll. Generally speaking, we're locked down outside of that, except for folks who experience, as you mentioned, some sort of qualifying life event, some sort of special circumstance that triggers a special enrollment period through PENNY, which is 60 days for that individual or for that family to get covered through the year. And examples of those special circumstances are losing health insurance through your job, losing eligibility for for coverage through some other channel. That's generally speaking, when you lose coverage, that opens up the 60-day period through Penny to get covered. Other examples include having a kid, having a baby, getting married, moving to the state, moving from one part of the state to another. Those are the big and common ones. But generally speaking, if you're experiencing some sort of change in your circumstances that affects your access to health insurance, let us know, because there are common ones, there are less common ones, and we are here to help. And it doesn't hurt to just check, particularly if you are uninsured or at risk of going uninsured. We exist to really make sure that people have access to health care services through the health insurance that we provide, and that they have financial help to make it affordable to them.
And somebody calls you up and you discover that they qualify for something else. Do you refer?
Yeah, I mean, most commonly the established one is with the Department of Human Services, where if someone comes to us and applies for coverage, but is eligible for the state's medical assistance program, health coverage for, generally speaking, for the very low income, or the state's CHIP program. If you apply for coverage through Penny, we have an automatic process of getting you over to the Department of Human Services to finish that process, because broadly speaking, our goal is to make sure that you are covered, that you have health insurance, and we have the ability to work with DHS to get eligible folks for medical assistance and CHIP over to them to finish the process to get covered through that program. And they work with us to make sure it happens the other way. So if you apply through DHS and you think you're eligible for medical assistance, but you're actually eligible for coverage through Penny, they get the application over to us so you can finish the process with us.
And who should be picking up the phone and calling you or going to penny.com? And I got to keep reminding people that Penny is spelled P-E-N-N-I-E. That's penny.com. Who should be going to you?
So anyone who's uninsured right now should come to penny.com, check out their options. We have more financial assistance available today than we've ever had in the past, in past open enrollments. So if you've taken a look previously and it's been unaffordable, it's worth taking another look, because increased financial assistance is now available. And it will help you get connected to coverage that pays for preventative services. The plans are comprehensive. They will make sure that you have your prescription drugs covered, your inpatient services, your preventative services that I mentioned, a whole host of services, and will give you access to, you know, peace of mind and financial security that comes with knowing that you won't go bankrupt if the worst happens. So again, the uninsured, we're trying to reach, and people should come in and take a look, and they can do so without setting up an account. So if you want to just evaluate, that's available to you. We also are oftentimes a very affordable alternative to other things. So if your plan that you're currently enrolled in is too expensive, if you're enrolled through COBRA, if you're enrolled in non-comprehensive coverage, I would urge you to just evaluate Penny and check us out during open enrollment, because there may be a more comprehensive health plan available to you, and there may be more financial assistance to make the cost of your plan more affordable to you. And it doesn't cost anything to check us out, and we have a number of supports and services that can help you do that evaluation and ultimately navigate the process.
And of course, that important date for 2022 is January 15th now, January 15th to be enrolled on February 1st. Otherwise, well, it's got to be one of those exceptions there, the marriage, the move, the loss of health insurance. But again, for questions, go to penny.com. You can enroll and you can ask questions about your coverage. Thank you to Zachary Sherman, the executive director of Penny, our Pennsylvania Health Exchange. And I am not going to say saving the best for last, because you will. Here he is, Ed Lafferty, public affairs specialist for the Social Security Administration. Ed, welcome back. You always make me so happy.
Well, thank you. Happy holidays. Good to hear from you again.
What would you like to talk about? You've got, let's give you 4 minutes here.
Okay, 4 minutes. Four things. How about that? One, I don't want to talk about people facing barriers. In 2021, as you well know, and other people know, since March 17th, 2020, Social Security offices were closed to the public. Critical need issues, we could still assist people, but basically we wanted people to go online or to call us. But of course, we discovered throughout the last year and a half how dependent so many people are, individuals who do face barriers, who have issues, homeless, mental health issues, and so forth. And so we've partnered with literally thousands of organizations and companies across the country in a partnership, in some cases taking applications, in other instances just doing referrals, but guiding individuals to Social Security, helping to make sure that, yes, they knew what to do, what proofs to give, and so forth. So it's been a very rewarding, but a different concept in terms of Social Security, reaching out rather than having individuals come in. And so 2021 has been very important in that, and we're going to be continuing that in the foreseeable future. We've found that this really does work. And one of the points in highlighting this is just how richly textured organizations throughout communities are, how helpful. As you already know this, you deal with them all the time, but it's been really rewarding to work with agencies and organizations and advocacy groups who just are so terrific. People facing barriers still need to assist them. And so organizations and groups, if you know them, who want to reach out, contact Social Security so that we can assist people. Number two, you're familiar with this. My Social Security, just a few months ago, I'm sure you were waiting on this, but in 2021, Social Security created a new statement. Have you looked at your statement recently? I won't ask you to do it, but when you get off, it used to be four pages, rather cumbersome, and now it's a cleaner, more white space. But the important point is that it really gets a lot of information in a very, very, very short period of time. But what's nice about it is actually it breaks down, this is what you receive at 62. This is what you get at 63. This is what you get at 64. So in fact, it's one of those usable resources everyone should be looking at, whatever your age, you're paying into Social Security, look at your statement. But there's a new statement online. And guess what? You can get that through my social Security account. You've heard this before.
I have.
You have. This is not unusual, but every year, I mean, Social Security, like all organizations, bureaucracies, you have to change. You have to evolve. You have to make it better for the customer, the consumer, the viewer, and so forth, beneficiaries. And obviously, in this case, the taxpayer. The third one we want to point out is full retirement age. You probably already know this. You've heard me say it again. But individuals who have, as the retirement age has increased, people born between 43 and 54, the full retirement age was 66. And then it went up each year a couple of months until now. Anyone born 60 and later, their full retirement age is 67. 2022, that's the first year someone whose full retirement age is 67 can now apply at age 62. Why is that important? That leads to the fourth point, which is cost of living adjustments took place, including things such as the annual earnings test, which you've heard me talk about many times. So for someone who is under full retirement age next year, the annual earnings test has increased the numbers. And once again, you can find that on our website at ssa.gov. But the point is, happy birthday to those people turning 62. And if you're thinking of filing for retirement benefits and you were born in 1960, this is the first year you should start thinking about it, as obviously you turn 62 next year. So happy birthday to all of those individuals.
And if you go to My Social Security, if you've got your account, you can find out how much you're going to actually get if you do that at 62 and your happy birthday.
Oh, and you are a wonderful student. Thank you so much. You've actually listened. No one in my immediate circle of friends and contacts listens to me. So I thank you so much for listening to me.
And I always enjoy talking to you, even though I always leave these conversations thinking prison is my best retirement hope. So
I'm always so glad that I've really helped a career path for someone. Thank you so much.
Well, Ed, thank you. And thank you for all the times you've been on the show. We'll hear from you again really soon in the new 2022. We'll go over all of these four points in more depth. And I wish you the best of the new year.
And you as well. Joyous New Year to all of your listeners and to you, of course.
Take care. Of course, for more about your Social Security Administration, go to ssa.gov. That's ssa.gov. My guest, Ed Lafferty, the Public Affairs Specialist. I want to say thank you to everybody who helped me out today with this recap program. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.